Hello, nice to see you. Nice to see you back. Do you recall what I said the previous session? I said something that prayer is not the favorite of the spiritual exercise of the Christians. Did I say that? That's good proof. This is the second time, and then we are becoming smaller as an audience. Probably when I will finish this series, maybe two or three. anyway, it's glad to see you for the second presentation. And as I told you last time, every session from now on will be focused on specific character from Bible. So, as an introduction, and somehow to remember the core ideas from last time, the best way to understand what's the meaning, the purpose, and the application of prayer is to look into those experiences, those practical examples which the Bible richly gave us. Now, it is true, there is no specific book or chapter in Bible which is dedicated specifically for this topic. I mean, you will not find a book who says this is a book only for prayer. For this chapter, from that book, we will learn something about prayer. But there are scattered all around in the Bible different themes and ideas. And what we can find is like hints and clues, but mostly practical examples. From those who were engaged in this, I would say, long time relationship with God. Like they are case studies, humans like us, and maybe you recall when Jacob said in his apostle that in his book that Elijah was like us. While he's praying for the rain, he was just like us. The share the same weakness, and we have now the same assurance that we can pray and we can expect the same answers from God. Now, this is why we should study prayer from this practical perspective, not some theoretical ideas. Because I would say the lesson is very obvious. The prayer is an experimental pursuit, not a theoretical one. Now, our first guest for sharing with us some experiences or practical lessons is, as we know, Father Abraham, right? Abraham. This is our first guest. And we all know that he was specifically called by God for becoming the father of a new nation, Israel. And for pursuing this dream, he was relocated from he belonged, like the Ur, and to a new territory. Now, this is precisely when his adventure began. When he was called, leave that city and go to another place. Now, if you are looking in those chapters from Genesis, you will find out that Abraham's relationship with God was not easy going. You can see that. And this is why I like very much the Bible, because it's very open. And it opened us those doors to find precisely what was the meaning of their relationship. It wasn't going easy going. And the main feature of this relationship with God could be encapsulated in one word, and that word is covenant. Lord made a covenant with Abraham, and then this covenant is repeated somehow on another basis. That's true. with people of Israel and so on. But this is the main word, covenant. And at the bottom of this word, covenant, stood one main feature, which is the word trust. Trust, you know? I mean, Abraham was supposed to trust God for delivering his promises. And God trusted Abraham that he will fulfill his duties. And you can find these ideas in that conversation with Abraham and God. But it's very important to understand this. The basics of our relationship with God is trust. We will trust him, and he trusts us for being such good children. While God was, always remained faithful to that covenant, Abraham didn't always. You know that, right? And that wavering faith of Abraham produced some tragic consequences. Someone is pointing back to that moment when Abraham wasn't keen to follow God's plan to have patience and to wait for the blessing, and he rushed and he delivered another baby with that woman, and Ishmael is, they said, the father of the Arabic people. And you know that the Arabic people, basically the Muslims ones, they're claiming that their father is Abraham. Really? Basically, they are stepbrothers with the Jewish. This is why they are so in love with Jewish people, you know? They're stepbrothers. Sorry?
They are two brothers, cousins. They are cousins.
No, they share the same father.
They're stepbrothers.
They're not cousins, they are stepbrothers. Because they share the same father. No? Anyway, the problem is that from that moment, Abraham's family relation wasn't the same, right? And all this tragic event, you know. So, but Abraham was involved in many experiences during his 175 years of life. No? 175 years. And I will resume this experiences, saying that it was relocation from Ur to another point. It was immigration, I would say, going to Egypt and another place that later on. It was conflict when it was engaged in battle with those kings. It was promise, you will have a son. Circumcision, this is the sign that you will belong now to God. The family relationship, you know, and the sacrifice as well, you know. He was supposed to bring Isaac as a sacrifice. So, in all these events, we can spot God as always being in the close proximity to Abraham and delivering him what? Promises, counsels, protection, blessings, guidance, hope, assistance, sometimes correction, justice, and grace. Grace. So, we can say that Abraham felt God's presence in his life, right? And he knew how to approach him. Because if you are looking at Abraham's style of communication with God, it was very natural. Like a conversation, right? Very natural, very candid, very direct. Very direct. I mean, he expresses frustration without problem, you know? And all this stuff. Sometimes he was very keen to obey and trust, to persevere in his dreams, to fulfill his duties. Other times he was hiding from God and trying to outsmart him, you know. by devising his own plans and strategies. This is what that was Abraham. And the same, it's very interesting, the same style had who? Not not Isaac. Jacob. His nephew, right? Very interesting. Not the nephew. Sorry. Grandson. Sorry, yes. Grandson. Because we can trace back to our parents or our grandparents some traits of character. So in this case, Jacob had the same ability to switch from the path of righteousness to the path of Adam, you know. This is the same problem. Isaac wasn't that type. Anyway, Abraham's relations in the end was genuine. It was genuine and open. And I would say that this is the cardinal condition for our relationship as well. Any successful communication with God must have this simple but fundamental ingredient. Honesty. You cannot be dishonest with God. Yes. He already knows what's in your mind and heart. Openness, not trying to hide something because he knows, to be open. Clarity, straightness, trust, patience. We lack many times patience. We want right now and right here. And willingness, to be willing to accept God's will in your life. Now, God is not some abstract idea or like a detached observer who is presiding over his universe from his ivory tower. He's a person. He's an entity, a personal entity who is capable of every imaginable feeling and emotion. You know? Who can hear, who can speak, who can be touched by our problems or our feelings as well. This is the biblical image of God. He is a father who is very sensitive and attentive to his children. He takes an interest to every aspect of our lives. He concerns himself with everything that bother us, worry us, or everything like that. Now, he not only feel what we feel, feels not what we feel, but also as we feel in that very moment, he precisely feel what trouble us. So, from this perspective of personal relationship with God, we should see the prayer. Now, let's turn to a specific moment in Abraham's life, Genesis 18. Because we can spot here something about prayer. Genesis 18. Now, this is a very interesting moment in Abraham's life. He had many experiences with God, conversations, and all this stuff. But this is different. In Genesis 18, this is different. So, this is that type of moment, that special moment, when he had the privilege to get a face-by-face conversation with God. You know? Face-by-face. Usually, he heard something. God said to him, do that or take that. But in this Genesis 18, that was a face-by-face communication. Because if you are looking in the text, there were three persons. They're visitors. They came over. Abraham, let's say, headquarters, right? And one of them was the Lord. Now, we know that in those specific moments in Old Testament, actually, it was Christ who discovered himself. It was Christ. So, anyway, the idea from Genesis 18 is that Abraham had this privilege to have a face-by-face conversation with God, and they ate and spoke over the meal, you know. And more than that, God was willing to make some revelations, even confessions about his plans, which is very interesting. Somehow it seems that he was looking for someone to share his burden with. You understand? I mean, I need someone to speak with about the problem that I have encountered in this area. And we know precisely what was the reason. Because the problem was the Sodom, the city of Sodom, right? It was an impending peril for that doomed city. And the second, the good news for the promised prospective son. So we can say that the reason for his visit was to inform Abraham about those two things. Now, I would say that the communication, the prayer, is not an unilateral direction. I mean, just we ask, we are sending prayers like emails, you know, and many of them are ending in spam, you know, because we don't know what to say and our mind is another place and so on. It's not just like that, not just sending us lot of prayers and words, and looking forward to a quick and positive reply. God has something to say too, you know. He has his concerns, his worries, hopes and joys as well. This is why God was willing to come over to Abraham's tent and to discuss a problem. And we should understand that the prayer is that opportunity not only to hear ourselves as we send in prayer, but to hear God as he's trying to share something with us. This is how I picture prayer. In this moment when Abraham is with God, speaking while eating probably, or after, about something that concerns. Abraham has his own concerns about his son. He's not yet born. God has his own concern about those wicked sons from Sodom who are not willing to turn over from their wicked path. So they are together in this. Let's talk about this. Now, I would say that this is the best way to describe prayer. It's like an invitation from God. Let's talk about this. What do you think about this? What's your idea? Let's find a solution. This is how I picture God. So, this is the beauty of Genesis 18. Because it opens us a door through which we can see God in his light. Right? Now, back to the purpose. What was Lord's purpose for that visit? Basically to inform Abraham that he will have a son in about 1 year time. Even though Sarah wasn't at all convinced by this perspective, you know. She laughed and, you know, that I didn't laugh. She lied. And God says, yeah, I know, you laugh. I heard you. But anyway, no problem. You will have a son in about 1 year time. And to assure him and Sarah that this word, his word, will become reality. If I said that you'll have a son, you'll have a son. Believe me, trust me. And that was precisely so. However, when the Lord was about to leave, he made this touching confession in verse 17. Shall I hide from Abraham what I am about to do? Now, give me a proper explanation of this very touching moment. Why would God felt this need to share with Abraham what he was about to do? What was the reason? Because if he already had did his mind, you know, who is Abraham to give him some hints about my work? What was the reason? Try to find beyond the letters, beyond the text, beyond the, try to find what was the reason. How do you perceive God after this moment? Is it interesting? Was he bent to destroy Sodom? What do you think? That was his plan? No, I'm going to destroy Sodom, that's for sure. And why should you disclose your plan with someone who knew that he will try to stop you? Because that was trying Abraham to do, to stop God from doing that. And if we do believe that God already knows what is in our minds, he would know that Abraham would have this reaction. So what was his plan anyway? From this moment, from this special moment, I cannot picture God as someone who was bent to destroy Sodom. Somehow, he was looking for someone to plead for that doomed city. You know? To give him the opportunity to intervene and stop the disaster. Do you understand what is the dynamic of this discussion? It's very interesting. Apparently, God was willing to send fire upon the city, but if you are looking thoroughly in the text, you'll find another picture. You'll find another picture. What follows is the most unexpected negotiation in the history of prayer. Abraham takes his chances to obtain the best deal for that cursed city. Interesting. If you find how many people? 40, 30, 20, 10. Why Abraham stopped to 10? He doesn't have enough courage. But anyway, I crossed the border line. Anyway, 10, from 50 to 10, it's okay. What was the problem? I think that Abraham felt that they are not even 10. He knew. He said, okay, I'm stopping here. Maybe, may I be there, but I don't think so. And if you are looking at the Sodom history, I mean, yes. Anyway, who was somehow prepared for such short notice leave? Lot. But he was not clear. Yes. His wife, we know what happened to her. His daughters, we know. Another dreadful story. And nothing. Not even five. Now, what was Abraham trying to do? We know, to avoid that, because he knew that Lot was there and his family, and maybe some other, presumably, right. righteous people, which wasn't the case, but anyway, he thought so. Now, we were told that we cannot change or influence God while being engaged in the prayer. You know that? And the only way that prayer is oriented is toward us. I mean, during the prayer, we can change, but not God, right? It is true that we cannot change God, that's for sure. But it doesn't mean that He is not touched by our pleas. He is. And He is ready and willing to reconsider some facts. There's another interesting text in Genesis 18, when God, if you are faster than me, that text, when God said, "I heard some rumors and I have come to see if it is true or not about that city." The text is right after 17 or 18. Probably it's even 18. Try 18, verse 18. If that's the text.
20.
Okay, let's try 20.
He says, "Then the Lord said, 'Our father said unto Gomorrah, is so great that they seem so brilliant, that I will go down to and seek what they have done as bad as they have done, and that's reaching."
Okay. It's very interesting. What was the idea in this text? That some rumors or news has reached God, but He is not satisfied with the rumors. He will go personally to see if this is the fact or not, which is a human way to say, because He already knows. But the idea is that He's not willing to take any action until the last mean was exhausted. I will try everything for this city. I will go personally there if this could change the fate. This is the idea. That doesn't have an inflexible decree. Now is done. We cannot change anything. No. He can change. He was willing to. But sadly, those people remained unrepentant. That was the problem. So, coming back, why it is true that we cannot change God, it doesn't mean that He's not touched by our prayers, our pleas. More than that, He puts Himself in such position when He actually can change the situation as a direct result of our intercession. He can change that situation if someone is willing to assist Him in that task. That was the reason why He needs Abraham. I need someone to be my partner. Maybe we can change the destiny of that city. Maybe. I'm not sure, because depends on the reaction. This is why He sent those two angels to the city. What was it? Only to grab Lot and free the city? No. They were trying one last. And what was the reply of the city when those angels appear? As a man, you know the reply, yes? Wickedness, lawlessness, and so on. That was their final answer. "We don't need you here." And they recover what could be recovered. Lot and small family. That was the last moment, the last, let's say, glimpse on mercy upon them. Sadly, the people of Sodom a destruction. It wasn't God themselves who brought about the same destruction. So, I would say that the prayer is ambivalent. I mean, it goes in both ways. Not from us to him, but he to us. And the beauty of it is that he's not imposing his will upon ourselves. Even those who are not willing to take his counsel and to be obedient. He's not imposing. He's trying to find the best solution. Now, God wanted Abraham as his partner in this terrible task to decide Sodom's future. And Abraham stood there as a partner. Why God is willing to play this part? You know why? Isn't he sovereign and self-sufficient? Does he need help from us? What do you think? He can do it without us, right? He can do it right away. But somehow, what the purpose of this partnership, I would say? Well, the thing is that God is willing to take any risk in order to preserve this human freedom. Freedom to choose. Decision. You are supposed to take a decision. Make a decision, not me. So, even God, which is sovereign, right? He's not going to make a decision in my behalf. Or his or her. You are supposed to do it. He creates the opportunity that you may take that decision in the response, to be responsible, right and sound in your mind, but at the end of the day, you are responsible for that decision, not God.
Yeah, I think, Pastor, because you say it is also under control, so that the fact that the devil says that God imposed his laws to people. So in this time, in
yeah.
this case, he's giving people freedom of God.
Yes. Exactly. Now, if I would say that the direct negotiations with Sodom failed due to their blunt and open rebellion, now God was looking for other ways to save that cursed city, right? Somehow to save it. Give them more time. I picture this in this way. Somehow it was looking for some legal procedure in order to intervene. Not for their destruction, but to spare the city. Mm-hmm. And he needs someone to give somehow this permission. Wait, look, this one, Abraham, he's pleading for that city. For this reason, I can give them another chance. But without anyone pleading, I cannot do nothing. My arms are tight. That's the problem. Well, it seems strange because we picture God as being omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient, you know, everything. He is the perfect. But somehow, in this great controversy, you know, we have this study at the Sabbath school lesson, right? In this great controversy, mankind is supposed to be in the middle and somehow to decide. And God needs us as a partners in order that he can have the right to intervene, to save, to repair, and to recover. That's the beauty of the intercession. Now, I will end saying this. There are many lessons, obviously, that we may draw from this moment, Genesis 18. But the main feature of this intercessory prayer is that God himself is putting in that position where he can be touched and engaged by us. That he is willing to save and not to destroy, and he needs us, the humans, as his partners for developing a better way for those around us. That by our prayers and our actions, we can make a difference in this world. So, it doesn't come strange to you if, let's say, someone who's living in Harrow, right, is supposed to pray for Harrow. Because we don't know what's happening here or other part of the city, the great city. But we are supposed to pray for those around us. We don't know what perils stay behind them. Because the enemy has many strategies and trying to trap them. But if God sees someone who's willing to pray for those men or women, he can do something for them. There is very interesting scripture in Isaiah. I'm looking for a man who prayed for intercession, and I found no one. Very tragic outcome. I found no one. And then I will come by myself, says God. But it doesn't need to be that, like that. We are supposed to be his partners in his wonderful work of saving lives, people's lives. That was the second session about prayer, and Abraham was our guide to give us some practical lessons. And probably we should feel more responsible for those who are living next to us, because God is calling upon us to be his partners, because he can do something when he is empowered, strangely, by us to do so. Okay, God bless us, and see you next time when we'll have another guest, and I believe that his grandson, Jacob. Okay, any questions?